Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole-body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. For those unfamiliar, SDHAM is the morning show that is attached to the Soccer Down Here, the SDH Network. And on our platform on YouTube, on X, and on Twitch, Monday through Friday, 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time, because we're Turner Time kids and we start at the 05 instead of the zeros, until 11:05. Traditionally, we will go long, just as a public service announcement. So 2 hours plus, usually, Monday through Friday, we go through everything to start your day on the SDH Network. Through our checking of pundits and friends and newsmakers and players and front office personnel, we try to bring all of the storylines to you to get you ready for your day, stuff you might have missed in the overnight, and stuff that you might be anticipating as you enjoy the beautiful game 24/7, 365. This time around, with Atlanta United working their way in a Saturday afternoon matinee in Toronto, it made sense to catch up with our friends from Toronto. We catch up with Craig Forrest and James Sharman from Footy Prime and their show North of the Border. It's part of our information exchange program, Opposition Research, where we find out about Toronto. They find out about Atlanta. We find out about each other, and we anticipate the matchup coming up around the corner. Then it was an interesting conversation that we had with Atlanta United's Director of Methodology, Javier Perez. And literally, we got notice a handful of minutes before we went on the air that we could have him. And we said yes, and it was orchestrated. And so it was kind of a conversation where we opened a door and ended up opening another couple of doors for later conversation. So it was a great way to find out how things are going at the academy level with Atlanta United 2 and MLS Next Pro and having to do it on the fly. And so that's guest number two this week. Guest number three from Front Office Sports, Margaret Fleming, with the announcement that Team 18 is now coming into the NWSL in Columbus, Ohio. We caught up with Margaret to find out what her thoughts are about Team 18, Team 17 coming to Atlanta in 2028, the NWSL in general, and its growth here in the 2026 season. So it's Margaret Fleming on the NWSL, Director of Methodology for Atlanta United, Javier Perez, and to start things off, our friends at Footy Prime, north of the border. It is Craig, it is Sharms, it is me kicking things off, Opposition Research on SDHAM. And here's where we bring in our friends, James Sharman, Craig Forrest. And I know Sharm, I've known Sharms for, 25 years. So let me bring in James Sharman and Craig Forrest from our friends at Footy Prime. Gentlemen, good morning. You guys had chaos. We had chaos of a different variety. So, who won the toss and who is going to either defer or go first? How are we going to do this? Who won the toss?
How about the Hall of Famer? Let's let Craig do his thing. You know, he's a guy that brings the legitimate credibility, John. You know, as you know, 20 years in the biz and still no credibility from my end.
Oh, whatever. All right, so we'll go to Craig. So, Craig, madness last night involving Toronto. I did not have Luca Gavron on my bingo card, being the third keeper in MLS history to have a goalie goal and the chaos that was personified there. So for those that missed it, because we were paying attention to the match that precedes Atlanta and Toronto with Atlanta and New England, what did we miss?
Wow. Well, it was pretty special. Well, coming from a goalkeeper is incredibly special. I never scored a goal. I always wanted to score a goal. And for Gavron to do it in his 25th or 26th professional appearance, I mean, he's averaging more goals than Zimmerman at center back, I think, per game. So his goal ratio per appearances is actually very high for a goalkeeper.
So, Sharms, let me ask you this. With the addition of Josh Sargent, there's two S's very close together, and when you're up early in the morning, it doesn't wash very well. When you have the addition of a Josh Sargent to the offense, how different is it looking now than it had been before? As Sharms, I think, has frozen. Nothing like live. You know what I'm saying? So Sharms froze. So Craig, let me ask you that question since Sharms froze, and I'll go ahead and make sure that James comes back in and he's unfrozen. See, that's how this works. So how different are they with Sargent in the lineup offensively now that they have this talisman up top?
Well, I think he's going to do very well in this league. I mean, most designated players, attacking players, do well. I mean, look at the league last night. I think there was 43 goals in 11 games, I think. I don't know if there's ever been more goals in a day for MLS in history. Maybe, but that was a lot of goals. And it's a frantic type of style, certainly with Toronto FC. If they can get themselves sorted out defensively, I think they'll have a chance to do something. But overall, they're pretty soft defensively. They, you know, not overly organized at times, like I said, frantic. But Josh Sargent up top, I think he'll do very well. He's getting lots of chances, and he's strong, physical, and I think he's enjoying his time at Toronto SC so far.
All right, so let's talk backline and the whack-a-mole that folks seem to be doing when it comes to finding all these opportunities. Where are these gaps and weaknesses, and how is it attempting to be addressed? And I think we need all the state secrets for Atlanta coming off of this loss to New England to attack Toronto in yet another matinee at BMO. So what are we staring at here?
Well, I think if Atlanta get at Toronto, they will create chances. There's no doubt about that. But Toronto will also cause problems to just about any team in MLS at times. So they have that to deal with. But if they can organize themselves and play strong defensively, hold up Josh Sargent, I think they can get a result. But as far as the team goes, over the last few years, it's been difficult. I mean, Atlanta's kind of in the same position, not doing particularly well the last couple seasons. So trying to find their way in the league, and I think that's where Toronto FC are right now. They've made some good moves for the last few years. I think they're handcuffed with some of their salaries and caps. So they freed up that. They brought in a designated player with Josh Sargent. I think they're moving in the right direction.
All right, so Sharms, let me ask you this. The shiny object is obviously Josh now. Who else do folks need to focus on? Who's in the spot shadow for you for the success here in the short term with this addition of a major megastar DP? Who else do folks need to gravitate toward to sit there and go, oh, okay, so Toronto is doing well, despite what we just talked about on the back line. Toronto is successful because of not just A, but B and C.
Yes, it's a good question. And I think TFC fans are still very suspicious of any players that are doing the job properly at TFC, given what's happened the last little while, given the Italian DPs they had that just didn't work out. But I think the optimism surrounds Georgi Mihailovic, who obviously is out right now for a while, a real gut punch to the team, the injury to him, the pelvis issue there. But Daniel Shalloui has arrived as a player that I think not many TFC fans knew too much about. Maybe they saw him as being a squad player, someone that could step in and do a job at a time, but he's become a star. He's become a goal-scoring star, a real fantastic footballer who's brought a lot more to the table than we thought.
Well, and to that point, I mean, it's Shalloui is one of those guys, Craig, that in Kansas City, he was a troublemaker. And if you did not account for him, then there was going to be issues. And now I think that Toronto fans are seeing what Daniel Shalloui brought to the table in Major League Soccer. And this is the guy that you were hoping for when you brought him in, not the guy that was having the issues when Sporting was having their issues. Shallowy obviously was somewhat of the personification of that. You're getting the unleashed Daniel Shallowy now as a part of that offense, and that was what you were obviously looking for.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I think he was a great addition, and his ability to get forward, take chances, find space, find opponents, know where the space is, and find a good pass is certainly within his capabilities, and it's showing certainly in offensive zones for Toronto SC and Shallowy.
All right, so Sharms, we talked a little defense with Craig. Let me get your thoughts on the back line and the net with Toronto. I want to get your perspective on things and what you're staring at as well here in 2026 after the first handful of matches.
Well, I know you mentioned the Gavrin goal. It's funny, earlier this week on Footy Prime, the podcast, we were talking to Craig
there
about his experience.
Get that plug in there. Nice.
Had to get it in there, John. You know, I mean, it was honestly for a team that has had so few high points in the last number of years, it really is one of those goals that we'll talk about forever. But just this week, we're talking to Craig about, you know, how he almost scored a goal a couple of times for Ipswich and West Ham. Never really happened. He was talking about it was a relegation tussle last day of the season. They had to score a goal at Ipswich. He was up the pitch, back the pitch, up the pitch. In the end, he had to stay back in goal, but he was just hoping for that moment. He never got to enjoy it. So to see Lucas Gavrin, who's a really good guy, right? This guy's a solid human being. He's a Canadian boy. To see him get his moment after being a backup the last number of years to Sean Johnston and getting his chance and having a bit of a it's not a poor start to this season, but he's finding his feet as a starter. Had that moment was brilliant. So hopefully he can build on that. And in front of him, I mean, listen, you mentioned Walker Zimmerman, who I think is a legitimate, you know, top center half in this league, very important. But it all starts and finishes with Richie Larea, whether he's on the left or on the right-hand side. He's beloved by that fan base. He's beloved by Canadians. He brings that real tenacity. And I think sometimes his ability is overlooked because of that tenacity, how he always plays on the edge. He's a very, very good player, adds great pace. He can defend. He can attack. So I think it kind of starts and ends with Richie as a wider defender, but they have to sort it out, right, overall, because even in their worst moments of last season, they could defend pretty well. This year, sure, it's entertaining. I think Robin Fraser's getting grayer as we talk, just with the opportunities this team concedes over and over again. He's got to get that sorted out, but you know, as any footballer will tell you, it's easier to coach defense and get that figured out throughout a season than offense. And they have the offense right now. So I guess that's the positive. But yeah, they've got to figure something out of the back because they concede way too many goals.
All right. So speaking of the back, I'm going to ask the keeper about a keeper question. The differences between Luca and Sean Johnston, personality-wise, distribution, how they handle themselves, when folks are drifting into CTFC, what are they seeing in Luca that they didn't see in Sean?
That's a really good question. I mean, Johnston was a solid goalkeeper. There's no question about that. And he would still be here. I think that probably as a money thing, contract thing, you know, and decided that it was time for Gavrin to get an opportunity as a starter. I think as a starter, it is a little bit more intense, playing week in, week out. That is going to be a bit of a problem and a challenge for Gavrin. Johnston's quite obviously used to that intensity. And like I said, it was a very, very solid goalkeeper in a very poor team last year. So Gavrin is going to be up against it because defensively they haven't sorted it out yet. And he's under an awful lot of pressure, but I have a lot of confidence in him and he has grown in confidence as the season's gone on here, even in the early stages. So that's the biggest thing. I think it was just for him to be in the same level as Johnston is would really be his goal at the end of the season, which I think he's capable of.
And then, actually, yeah, John, just the last couple of weeks with the international camp in Toronto, Canada, was based at the TFC training camp, and Lucas Gavrin was in there. He wasn't part of the squad necessarily, but he was in there as that extra goalkeeper, especially when Max Crepeau was a little bit hobbled to start the camp. So he's getting some time with some very good footballers, different coaches as well. So at 25, I mean, Craig will tell you, he's still young for a goalkeeper. He's still not even close to his prime. Some of these guys don't break through to their late 20s, right? So I think TFC have a pretty good one there, but there will obviously be a little bit of patience. But as long as he's scoring goals, they'll be happy.
Dude, I see what you did there. Not quite in his prime. I see what you're doing there, Sharms. It's good stuff. Footy Prime guys hanging out with us, part of the equation. How many Footy Primers are there now, James? Like 28? How many 20 on your roster?
That way. Sometimes trying to herd them and organize them, it feels that way. Yeah, no, there's six of us. But it feels like more sometimes. A lot of opinions, a lot of voices.
Well, but that's good stuff, though. I do want to get into how you guys have evolved as well before you get out of here and we discuss things. So then, James, let me ask you this. You get behind Shallowy and Sargent. Then you're looking at folks like Kerr and Sifu and Osorio and Coejo and folks like that. You know, if you're not a true TFC sicko, these might be folks that aren't even household names in their own household. But they're part of that glue that Robin Fraser is looking for the overall success for Toronto FC in the midfield and in the attack. With these glue guys that are there in front of that back line that's got issues, what do they bring to the table?
Yes, it's a good one, that, because some of these players, you mentioned DeAndre Kerr as a prime example, Kobe Franklin, who's now scored back-to-back games. He's doing really well. These are young players that have come through from the academy in just the worst time possible, you know, for a young player. During the Bernardeschi and Insigne era, where it was, I'm not sure whether it was the all-time lows, but considering the money those guys were on and the fractures, shall we say, I think it's fair to say, maybe in the room.
Is not happy with what happened with that rate of return, brother. That's all I
know. It didn't work out great, did it? You know, when you look at the DP signings in the history of MLS, maybe the worst too. Certainly Insigne being the worst. But, you know, anyone that's been in a sports team that's losing all the time, you worry about the mentality of those young players learning from those players, right? So it's always a concern. So when you see these young players playing quite well now, DeAndre Kerr getting some minutes finally, up front, I think it's really important. And I think glue's a good way to put it. You want to see academy players get an opportunity just for the good of the club, right? To give those young players that hope that, yeah, maybe that can be me next time. But they're good young players. They won't be stars, I don't think. But players that can be good squad members and are cheap, right? And in a cap system, you need to have those guys that can put a job in with a decent, decent price there. Above them, you have the Coejos, midfielders who have been there for a while now, have that kind of tenacity, have a lot to prove, but is playing quite well right now. And then, of course, led by the captain, Jonathan Osorio, who no one's played more games with this club than Jonathan Osorio. He's a leader. Again, another great, great guy, but a Canadian boy, a Toronto boy. If he's not the face of the team, he's the soul of that team, him and Richie Larea. And still so, so important to kind of bring those young kids through and saying, yeah, forget about the last 2, 3, 4 years. You had to endure that nonsense. This is a new start for TFC, and maybe we can be in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and Richie Larea just fell down again. Craig, let me ask you, let me ask this. Schedule compression and roster rotation, when it comes to this stretch of matches for pretty much anybody in Major League Soccer, 4-12 for Atlanta United, pretty much the same for Toronto FC. Are you anticipating how different an 11 are you anticipating from midweek, considering all of the energy that was exerted last night? You're going to have today, tomorrow, and then, oh, by the way, it's brunch. It's time to play. I mean, how, when it comes to roster rotation, and, Sharms, you can follow up as well, but Craig, how much roster starting 11 rotation are you looking at here?
I wouldn't expect an awful lot at this stage. I mean, he's trying to find his best 11 and his best system with what he has. Obviously, there's a couple injuries that he's dealing with. But overall, it's like getting that consistency with a team and a lineup that is physically able to deal with those pressures. Not just, we talked about the goalkeeper, but obviously the out players as well. And I think they're in pretty good nick. They're in pretty good shape. And I wouldn't expect an awful lot of rotation from last night to the next game. Would you, Sharms?
No, I agree. I think, like you mentioned there, Craig, injuries are a big part of this. They have got some high-profile injuries right now. You want to get some consistency in that back four, and the way Franklin's playing, you can't drop him at the moment, I don't think, so he stays in there. Richie's going nowhere. Mon Louis and Zimmerman need to get some kind of chemistry, and you get that by playing minutes, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense. You might see a Derek Etienne Jr. get an opportunity, out wide, maybe for DeAndre Kerr, for example. But the depth, as much as it's improving, it's still a work in progress. I know Keith Pelly was talking when they fired the Maple Leafs GM, Brad Tree Living, and they were talking about how he's rebuilt TFC. It's like, no, you haven't. It's being rebuilt. It's in the process of being rebuilt, but the depth isn't there. You can't compare it to the top teams in the league. So I think it'd be a dangerous game to play with over-rotation at this point. And come on, they can play two games a week. These are footballers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Pelly actually said that they've rehabbed and fixed Toronto FC, huh?
Yeah, through data and analytics. That's how they did it. All done, finished.
Mm-hmm.
Job done.
So, all right. So then, if I was in that press conference situation, I would ask if they're doing analytics, how do you measure heart? How do you measure the South American, what they call in South America, the garra?
You know, how do you? John, true
how
story.
How do you measure this?
Yeah, Krieger, remember this. They have. They figured it out years ago. I remember being at a press conference during the glory years, actually just before the glory years. I think when Tim Bezpachenko first arrived, and Tim is a big data guy, as you know, and he said, we've found data points to measure grit.
Oh.
I remember him saying that to this day. And no one asked him, well, what do you mean by that? How do you measure grit? And he had, so they've got the answers.
Okay, just checking. I mean, because that's one of the things that when somebody, that's what I've, when you're into analytics. Now, let me ask this and jump in because I think we've just hit the freeform section of the program. Is it literally 100% analytics? Is it a mix? What are we talking about here? Are they all in on analytics or are they looking at shiny objects and going, we can't resist, you know, Josh Sargent kind of a thing? Where are they in the analytics VU meter? Where are they here?
Oh, it's interesting because, I mean, when you talk about analytics, it was like they just drop in the designated player situation when you had the, you know, Toronto FC has nailed the designated players back in the day, but they've also had some disasters in the designated player.
Yes.
You know, Jermaine Defoe is a good example. I thought I played with him at West Ham when he was a young lad, and I really thought he would have done well here, but you never know if they're going to settle. So I think they're in a position with a guy like Josh Sargent. Forget about analytics. He's settling, and he's going to be fine in North America. Like, we know he's going to be fine, and he played at a level that we know is going to be conducive to doing well in MLS as well. So analytics can play a major role, and we're seeing more and more of it these days. But I think you're right. How do you really get to the deep side of, you know, the heart of it, you know, and what does that bring? And how do we measure that? I think that's still impossible.
I will say, though, I mean, measuring heart, I mean, this team has shown resilience to come back in the last three games.
Been some of your matinee charms this year where you're sitting there and you're going, okay, get out the shovels, and all of a sudden it just turns into chaos.
Yeah, it's just done, right? And I think we're kind of jaded from seasons past where you're down two goals, forget about it, this team's out of it. But not this year. This team will fight back, but they will go down two goals. That's the problem so far, you know? So it's not perfect, but there's certainly there's an inner belief with this team that we haven't seen for a long time, but they are still have that propensity to give up that late goal. I don't know whether, I mean, listen, Jason Hernandez seems to be a pretty smart guy. I'm actually going to interview him next week, so maybe I'll come on and give you a better answer. But I think he's going to, he certainly takes, he thinks, he understands the importance of analytics, but I don't think it's going to be everything. I think you have to balance it, use it as the tool. We're going through that right now in hockey and up here in Canada a lot. You know, it's the hot, well, it's not the hot new world where it's been there for a long time, right? But data analytics, you know, yes, it's very important in modern sports. Has been for probably a decade now, right? But it's not everything. Just use it properly. And the signings so far this season have worked out pretty well. But like Craig said, Josh Sargent, you don't really need data points to prove that he's a good player. He's been doing it in some good leagues in Europe for a long time.
My data point tells me that Josh Sargent is a good player for us to have up top. You know, I mean,
yeah, right? You score 12 goals in the league championship regularly. You're probably going to score 12 to 15 goals in MLS, you would think. So, and I think he will. He's been a nice signing so far.
If he's in a system that fits the skill set, because we are experiencing that right now with Latte Lott, who was at Middlesbrough and close to 20 a year, and it has been an adjustment for him to come over here to Major League Soccer under multiple managers with Atlanta United, now with Tata Martino this year. It's been an adjustment for him. So I think it has to be system plus adaptation, I think, is what you're looking at here. And I think that Josh is doing that early on. Craig and James hanging out with us from Footy Prime. Another couple of minutes with them because I have to get them to give their blatant promo about where their game has advanced themselves and where they can be heard and all these kinds of things. We have to fill out the promo sheet for you guys before you get out of here. Craig, expectations for TFC coming into this season were what?
Well, you would think that they were aiming for a playoff spot. If they can get into the playoffs, that would be a success for them this season, I think. And I think they're heading that way and look as though they've got a chance to absolutely do that.
And, you know, Sharms, now that you see where they are right now in the standings in the East, when you look at adjustments, players coming in, you have, okay, we kind of have the idea of these are the guys, they're integrating, and right now looking at where Toronto is, you're sixth at 3-2-4, middle of the pack, but there's still some space before you get to the eight for the nine matchup because Columbus right now is 4 points behind it. Obviously, we're at the quarter pole here. How would you assess Toronto at the quarter pole right now being in sixth with three wins in their first nine?
Yeah, unbeaten in seven as well. A lot of draws in there, which is always a bit of a concern, especially during this long home stretch. Nine games, I think they're six games in right now, and they've got points, but they haven't got a ton of points with all those draws. So you know, that's a slight concern, given that they're conceding so many goals. There's a couple of away matches before the World Cup break, which are really important, obviously, to keep the momentum going. But I think with all the new faces, I think TFC fans are pretty happy overall, despite the attendance not being great. I think it's third worst in MLS right now, which is unheard of for this club.
It's like 5 degrees outside.
Well, that's part of it. We're tough up here, John. You kidding me? It's football weather. Five degrees, rain. Come on.
Short sleeves. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's amazing what a bit of winning will do, though, and maybe a few degrees in the old barometer there. That will change everything. But, yeah, I think they're where they would expect to be at this point in the season. They're going to get better, obviously. They didn't bring in a number of signings till very late in the window, as is the MLS way, it seems, right? So you don't know what you have. But, you know, it couldn't have been much worse in the last few years, really. And they've been loyal to Robin Fraser, who seems to be paying off right now. He's a calm, collected kind of guy, not too emotional, which is what this team needs. So I think they're probably pretty happy at the moment with where they're at. In sixth place, it's a weird league. You know, you're in the hunt, right? And then you get to the show, who knows what happens. But overall, in what's going to be such a weird season with the World Cup anyway, I think they're very happy with where they're at.
Yeah, even though you're not banking as many points at home as you would like. Craig, I come walking in the door at BMO this weekend. Is there anything else that we have not hit on the board that folks need to be keeping an eye on other than sitting on the under the overhang so they don't get wet?
Yeah, perhaps. Well, I would expect a bunch of chances, probably a bunch of goals as well for a team. I mean, if Atlanta come in here, like I said before, if they come in here and look after themselves and hold up Josh Sargent, organize themselves, they will play a very chaotic type of style, Toronto SC, in the last few games. That's what it seems to be, very disjointed, but offensively creating chances. So it's going to be important that everybody in Turner and goal does well. Like, he played well again last night, but organizes everything defensively and structures themselves. And if they do that, they'll have an absolute chance because they will get opportunities in the offensive zone. When you mentioned about, you know, playing to a style that's going to suit strikers, Josh Sargent or anybody, somebody like Kyle Lara in the Canadian international strikes me as somebody that, you know, wasn't doing too well in Spain. Then he ends up in the Dutch league, doesn't get an opportunity, almost, you know, we're wondering whether he's even going to get in the squad or play for the national team come the World Cup. He makes a move, he gets a place in Southampton, and that seems to be just the right fit for him. The right structure, the right players that he's playing with, and he can't stop scoring all of a sudden. So you're right, it's so important to play to the strength of the striker and have those players that can do that to help, you know, accommodate those strikers as well. And it does take time.
And so then for me, I guess the matchup to look at is the center back pairing for Atlanta United, a combination of an AME High, Steon Gregerson, and or Juan Barakal. going up against Josh Sargent for the matinee on Saturday. Okay, Sharms, I need you to cut the promo for me, and I need you to include the other business that you are in, because we have to figure out how to get the pies from the Cold Horseshoe down here to the studio so we can share the experience and the love and all of the elbow grease that you have put into the pies. So tell me, Footy Prime, tell me about the pies before you get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Footy Prime, we started this back in 2019, Craig, myself, Danny Dicchio at the time, Dan Wong, and Jeff Cole. Wow. Since then, Deitch has gone to the coaching ranks, of course, in Detroit right now. But we try to stay relevant. We thought we'd be there for a year or so, and then we get offered amazing jobs in the broadcast industry. And here we are now, 6 years later, still doing this. But no, we love it. It's very much banter-oriented. It's like a bunch of good friends having a few pints, talking about all things sport, football, using the sport really as a vehicle for wherever we want to go. We have a lot of fun. We record 4 to 5 times a week, Footy Prime the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We have a YouTube channel as well. Follow us on Instagram, all that good stuff. And basically, we're a bunch of idiots trying to sound smart, you know, which I think makes us in good content. And as for the pies, Sharma's Proper Pies in Ontario here in Canada, and we'd love to expand. And anyone that wants to invest financially, that would really help. And we will expand across North America. British style pies. Craig's a fan. In fact, Craig and Danny Dicchio were, when we first started the business way back in 2018, they were our guinea pigs. And I would try some things, make some pies for them. They give me their feedback, having known the pie culture from England. So without Craig, there'd be no Sharma's Proper Pies.
Yeah, we're encouraging them to do it because they are fantastic.
Fantastic. See, like I said, we got to find a way to get those across the Peace Bridge and work down here to the studio space and have our breaking of the bread. You guys know, and I say this genuinely, it's always good because, like I said, Sharma's and I go back probably about 2 decades. And from our time on King Street. And it's always fun for me to see how things continue to grow with you guys. We're in our 10th season. You guys are in your 8th. And so it's just great to see how things continue to evolve. Do not be strangers. If you wish to vent your spleen about anything, you've got the key to the kingdom now. You know where the key is under the doormat. You know where the garage door opener is. Just literally yell at me and go, yo, Nelson, look, I got to vent my spleen on something. When can I come in? And you guys know that you can come in anytime because, hey, look, we talk. It's always good to catch up with friends. Craig, James, it's great to see you guys. And just stay dry and enjoy the game this weekend. We'll catch up with you soon. Yeah, Sharm's on the backside. When you got stuff to talk about, you know, just literally yell at me and you'll come back in and we'll go from there. Good to see you guys.
Thanks, John.
Great to see you. Yeah, thanks, John.
For sure. And likewise, mate, you're always welcome on Footy Prime. We'll get you up here at some point very soon.
Yes, no doubt about it. There goes Craig.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B-plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B-minus or a C-plus life, because when you're living a B or B-plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Craig and James, so it's great to see them and find out what's going on the planet from their perspective. It's always great to catch up with friends that you've known for a long time and don't get to see all that often, and kind of get research on the opposition as well for Atlanta United. Great to catch up with our friends at Footy Prime. This is the best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Guest number 2 has to do with Atlanta United, but it has to do with building the future and seeing it happening right in front of you. It is a conversation that we had, albeit a very quick one, with the director of methodology, Javier Perez, to find out what's going on with the twos, with the academy, the growth, and all of the young players to anticipate coming through the pipeline. Surprise guest is here. Excellent. Now, so here we go. We're going to bring in the surprise guest. He's in the green room. And I was like, okay, are we going to get him? The answer is yes. And so we bring him in. Javier Perez, grand exalted poobah of methodology for Atlanta United. Good to see you, Javier. Good to see you.
Good
man.
To see you, John. Thank you for having me.
You're a busy dude. It's like we got a note at like a little before 9 o'clock. Hey, would you like to have Javier on the show? And I'm like, sure.
Yes. I just finished my first meeting of the day. My apologies. I was 3 minutes late
it's all good.
I have nine meetings today. So just getting everything aligned, you know?
It's all good. I will take that 9 minutes and I will run with it. My biggest thing for you is how busy are you right now trying to get everything in line with Atlanta United? How busy are you right now?
This is a very busy period of the year for me, you know, because it's we have the opportunity to benchmark all our teams. We work during the season, and as you know, the second team is pretty much starting the season.
Yeah,
we had a strong start. Last 2 weeks, we had both wins back to back, away from home, scoring 5 goals, having clean sheets in both games, and winning away against two tough opponents like Inter Miami, second team, and Chicago Fire, second team as well. So it's a way to test where we are as a club, where we are as a team, and where we are in our development system, because a lot of these players, they are coming from the academy. Actually, 6 days ago, it was my second anniversary at the club. I've been here for 2 years, and now we can start seeing which direction we are taking, you know. And this is for the second team, but as well, a little bit different for the academy, because the academy has a European style season, meaning that we start in August, we finish at the beginning of June, and now in the spring is where we have our major competitions, you know, and we have the opportunity to benchmark our academy versus the other academies in the country, you know. We had that a couple of weeks ago at GA Cup with our U16s being the champions of the Premier bracket, winning Columbus Crew in the final, but beating Cincinnati, beating NYCFC, Montreal, Philadelphia Union, pretty much all the MLS opponents on the way. And then the U15s, they lost by a narrow margin against Valencia FC, or Valencia Club de Football in Spain. And we were the only team that we were able to give some opposition to Valencia, which we were 2-2. We conceded a late penalty in the game, and we end up conceding that game 3-2. But Valencia won that tournament, taking aside our game, without major opposition. They won the final 4-0, just to give as a reference. So this is a good moment for us to benchmark our academy, not only at national level, which I think we are up there, probably between the two or three top academies in the country, but as well to benchmark our academy at international level when we play against international opposition. For instance, when we played with the U15s versus Anderlecht, and you think about Anderlecht as a club, you know, you think Belgium as a major power in terms of youth development, you know. Yesterday, one of the Belgian teams, he was Bruce, was in the final of the Youth Champions League against Real Madrid. Real Madrid won on penalties. And when we were at the A Cup, we beat Anderlecht 2-0 in the stadium game. And people might think, well, who is Anderlecht? When you think about the game that the US play against Belgium here in Atlanta, and the US was beat by Belgium 5-2. Mm-hmm. Four of the five goals scored by Belgium, they were coming from Anderlecht Academy products, you know? So this is the level of the player development clubs that we are talking about.
In the 2 years that you have been here, when you look at the growth of the program and the benchmarks that you've been hitting, what has it been like for you to see this growth get to where it is right now as it hits that next step when it comes to benchmarks and growth on a worldwide basis?
This is a great question. When I first came, I was here for 6 months, and I looked at the academy. I thought, we don't have any players. We have maybe one or two that they can come across in the first team, you know. And fast forward a couple of years later, these one or two, they are in the first team. One is Cooper Sanchez. The other one is Jonathan Ramson, you know, that he plays consistently for the second team. He's our third goalkeeper for the first team. Both actually eligible to play for the U18s still, you know. Cooper with all the starting games that he had this year already is a huge value for the club. But then after a year working with my team here at the academy, because these things, you don't get them done alone. You need to have a team around you. And I'm fortunate to have this group of people that they are very competent, very passionate about the player development. We start to see after a year that with the player selection and the player pool that we, and the profiles of the players, we start developing very, very interesting profiles. And now we have this U16 team that is at 2010. I can see 3-4 players coming into the first team without a problem, you know? So we start to see, we are fortunate to be in a very gifted market where we have very good profiles of players. And now it's a matter to develop them, you know. And we start to see the results after 1 year, after I was here. Mm-hmm. And two of the teams that we had in playoffs, the two teams that we had in playoffs, we were able to qualify both of them for their respective finals, the U15s and the U16s. We were the only MLS team doing that. And that's a good benchmark for us to determine where we are as academy. Then it's a matter of giving opportunities to those players into the professional environment. So as you know, I'm responsible for the second team and the academy. The way we do it is we fast track the top talent from the U16s and the U18s that they train in the morning into our second team environment. And now with Coach Tata, many of these players, they had the opportunity to train as well with the first team.
Last question for you, because I know you got a jet, because you're like one of the busiest men on the planet. What is the biggest challenge in the methodology department that you have looking at academy and twos? What is the biggest challenge you think you have going forward to continue benchmarking and success on the curve that you're looking for?
That's a great question. I think there are a couple of things. One is getting everybody aligned, and that starts with the recruitment, not only of the players, but as well your staff, you know, and the ability to work in a team setting. As I said before, these things, they don't get done just because I'm here. They get done because, yes, I'm leading the project, but I have a lot of competent people around me that they are able to execute the ideas that we state together. And in order to do that, you need a common philosophy, right? And the second biggest challenge is now that we have those players that they have the ability, and remember that I've been working in world-class organizations prior, I think that the biggest challenge is how to give those opportunities to these talented players into the first team setting, you know? Mm-hmm. I know that these players, they have the talent and the ability to perform at that level, but then you have to lay out the right environment and the opportunities for those players to make it into the first team, you know?
As always, my friend, it's great to see you. Great to get these updates. And I know that when you give these answers, it opens more doors for me that give more questions, which of course means you know you're going to have to come back.
No problem at all. It's always a pleasure. You know, you do something very meaningful, which is covering the work that we do here. If we don't have a voice like yourself, our supporters, our fans, they don't know what's going on, you know? And this is a great opportunity to connect to our fans, which at the end of the day, they are the ones that they are giving us the strength to continue to carry on to work, because at the end of the day is the badge what we are playing for, you know, for the badge and for our fans.
Yep, and I heard the notification go off on that laptop, which means you got to go. As always, be safe, my friend. We will see you at Mercedes-Benz. We'll see you there at the training ground, and we'll catch up with you soon. Javier, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, John. Likewise, have a great day.
There goes Javier Perez, Director of Methodology for Atlanta United. And so literally, that was the surprise guest. Literally, it was like, okay, you can have him, and here's your window. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. I will take that window and I will run. So that was a way to kind of open, open the door a little bit about what's going on below the first team and how everything integrates. Because really, it's cool to catch up with Javier for like 10 minutes. But because there's so much going on, it really needs a lot more than 10 minutes. But I will take that 10 minutes when I can get it. I mean, I would love to sit down and have, you know, me and Jason and Maddie and Javier just sit at a table and just literally talk for, if we blocked out an hour, like if we blocked out a lunch or if we blocked out a meal window and just broke bread and just did it that way, because there's a lot to get into. And I tried to kind of, you know, gauge greatest hits and things like that. It's like, okay, so he's been here for 2 years. Man, he's been here for 2 years, which was that kind of shocked me too. And because it seems just like yesterday. But to bring in Javier and have him talk about what he has seen, what they've implemented, the changes, all of this stuff, it was a very, very surface level opportunity to catch up with Javier. But what that did is it opened up more windows for me. Okay, so what has been implemented? How many people are in the department that we don't know about? What is, when it comes to getting everyone on the same page, it's almost like assembling a team. And how long did it take for everybody to get on the same page? Is it different personalities that come to the table, or is it all one like mind? And so all of these different things that come into my head when Javier opens these doors and I'm like, expletive deleted, there's a lot of stuff to get into. So him coming in this morning now lends itself to a longer conversation that needs to be recorded or just have him on just to kind of chew the fat and just have it turn into an organic discussion. So I was glad we got the 10 that we got, because you heard the notification go off at the end where, yes, you know, I got to go to my next meeting. And I think that what's like the 10-minute notification. So that means that Javier is ready to go from one location. He's got 10 minutes to get set up for the next meeting. And so for him, that means 9:55, he's got to be in the room, wherever that meeting is and whatever he's doing.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's always great to catch up with Javier, and we know that we need to have longer conversations than the one that we got to have this time around. But when you open a couple of doors, it means you have stuff to talk about next time around. It's always great to catch up with him, find out what's going on in the front office at Atlanta United. This is the Best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. And with the announcement of Team 18 in NWSL coming in 2028, their tag team partner is going to be Team 17 here in Atlanta. Before the week was done, Atlanta and NWSL Atlanta 2028 broke ground on their new training center. NWSL Commissioner Jessica Berman was down to hang out with Arthur Blank, Josh Blank, Rich McKay, and a lot of folks attached to Arthur M. Blank Sports and Entertainment, AMBSC. And so here's our conversation with Margaret Fleming from Front Office Sports about the growth of the NWSL, Team 18, Team 17, and 2026.
We get another debut. We have a debut. And I warned Margaret. I said this. I said, okay, so if you're coming in the morning show, make sure that you have your caffeinated beverage with you. That is perfectly fine. So any guest that has, you know, that comes in the morning show, especially with the busy day that she had yesterday at Front Office Sports, I said, look, here's what we do. It's a morning show. We have fun. We try to be informative. You can have your caffeinated beverage with you. Look, we have folks that have their animals with them that invade screens. But Margaret is not in a position where she can have animals invade, I don't think. You don't have animals ready to invade, Margaret, do you?
Not at the moment, no.
Okay, just checking. Because, like I said, there have been times where we have, you know, guests that are normally in their home studios and things like that, and you'll see a cat wandering across the screen and stomping on a keyboard, you know, that kind of a thing. So I just, it's perfectly fine, perfectly legal here at the morning show. And so I'm glad that we were able to get you on short notice. About what's going on in the NWSL. It's coming fast and furious these days with the franchises now.
No, seriously. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here.
All right. So Columbus, Ohio, and I keep having to remind folks here where we're based. It's like, no, not the Western Frontier, not Columbus, GA. While they have a great stuff going on in the Western Frontier, it is Columbus, Ohio, great soccer market. And this seems to have come together pretty quickly because you saw in their social media campaigns, it's like, you know, hashtag NWSL to, you know, CLB or whatever, CBUS. And all of a sudden it goes from this, hey, sign this petition campaign, to the vote by the city council, to the announcement yesterday. It seems like that this just came on the hop here.
It moved pretty quickly for sure. For people who are unfamiliar, there was a vote on Monday and another vote on Tuesday. There was the city council and then the county talking about giving some public funding toward an NWSL team. And locally it was pretty controversial because there was no NWSL team. And on top of that, it's giving a public park to a private soccer club, a public park that there had been, you know, years long plans to renovate and redevelop. In an underserved community that, you know, now is being promised a new park and, you know, see how all that goes. But all to say, it was pretty contentious and there was no team. And then, you know, next day comes the announcement, 18th franchise for Columbus, Ohio. So kind of a whirlwind week there so far for Columbus, but they are up next.
Mm-hmm. And I know that for those that kind of keep an eye on our studio space, if I was to shift to my left, camera right, you'll notice the team 17 right here with that one. So 17 turns into 18. And the crazy thing is, when you look at Denver, Boston, Atlanta, Columbus, it's like the rights fee is just like, all right, so we're going to close our eyes and, you know, spin the dial, and it's going to be just like the Price is Right, and it's going to be the, you know, cliffhanger dude that goes up the hill, and it's like, stop, and you throw the dart, and it's like 53, and then you stop, you keep it going again, 110, 150. What is this with the increase of the franchise fees in such short order? Is that confidence, or where do you think that comes from?
I have a couple thoughts here. I think it's confidence. I think people want a team. I think there's plenty of cities that would like to have an NWSL team right now. Columbus, you know, already has a soccer stadium that they can go in. There were willing owners who clearly have the financial capital to, invest into a team. And so I think that it's kind of, you don't want to grow too fast, you know, you don't want to grow too fast, but I think when it comes to Columbus specifically, it makes a lot of sense for the league to want to go there. They're already going there this year for a Challenge Cup, and that's been such a big soccer market for, you know, ever. When it comes to the rising fees, I think it kind of speaks to the time. It speaks to the demand for, like, people who want to own a club. That NWSL is raising the price and they're saying yes. It's also, you know, you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, because it's like, these are, you know, major NFL owners and, you know, people who have multiple sports teams, and, like, you know, $205 million is huge and amazing and record breaking. And at the same time, like, you know, they're, you know, have billions. So it's you know, the growth is happening. And at the same time, it's like, go to people who are, you know, more able and willing to put that forward. My other thought here, though, is, like, right on NWSL. I think about to compare to the WNBA, when you think about kind of these growing leagues at this time with these rising expansion fees. We saw last year the WNBA announced, you know, they've also had new expansion teams and the fees going up, and they announced three teams for 28, 29, 2030, in three different cities, and kept it at that flat rate. And they had been building before that, you know, it went up. Those were more than what Golden State was, than what Toronto was, and what Portland was. But still, they planned really far in advance at a fee for now. And there's a whole argument of that, of, like, should they have waited and it would have been higher? They want the money sooner, or, you know, are they capitalizing on the success now? Would it go down? You just don't know. And I think, seeing how it's been rising, I give credit to the NWSL for, I don't know where the bid was at. It might not have been together, but, like, they could have waited or they could have done Columbus then, you know, when they did Atlanta at the same time, taking less money, but they kind of waited for the two and kind of got more money out of Columbus than Atlanta by, like, waiting and going. So I think it's the rising expansion fees are, you know, a great thing that puts more money into the league, into the system, pays, you know, players more at the end of the day, gets better facilities, all the things. So I think it's a great thing for the league to have the rising expansion, but I give them credit for kind of assessing them individually and letting those go up, and not, you know, choosing now for, you know, to criticize the W 5 years down the line.
Yeah. And it's like the rate of return, it's like, yeah, we're going to wait a couple months. So Atlanta comes in at X price. And then it's like, yeah, we're going to wait. We'll wait a couple of months. And all of a sudden, the Haslams and Mr. Edwards come in. They sit there. It's like, man, the rate of return just from there to there.
Yeah. I mean, here's 40 million more. Yeah.
I mean, that's a great play. It's like, you wait a couple of months. Yeah. 40 million more. That's a good rate.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, and you may not know this, what is the distribution? Is it like in other leagues where the expansion fee comes in and it's chopped up with all of the current members and the league, or does it go straight to the league and then they redistribute that way? Where does the expansion fee, what's the breakdown?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how they're exactly doing it these days with all this money coming in. If there's like a different, you know, if they handle, you know, 53 million differently than 205, right, or if it's the exact same. But The NWSL is a single owned, like a single entity. So the teams all kind of report to the league. It's, yes, it is these like franchises and these expansion teams, and they all have their own ownership. But at the end of the day, like every team is owned by the league. So that goes to the league, and the league can kind of, you know, I would assume that it's kind of, it goes to the league, and then the league can kind of figure out what it wants to do with it. I would, you know, kind of assume that they're gonna, you know, follow the model of giving it to the, spreading the wealth, giving it around. But to be honest, I'm not really quite sure how they're
here's a 20 for you and a 20 for you. Yeah. Like I said, I didn't know if you knew if there was a percentage breakdown, if it was all even partners. Since it is single entity, the league sits there and it's like, no, we'll take that, and then we'll figure out, and you get a 20 and you get a 20. So right now, and they're going to play at Scott's Miracle-Gro. We just call it the Death Star. I mean, that's what they called it. So fine, we're going to call it the Death Star. So they're going to play in that venue. I'm hoping that they really have their horticulturalists and all of their folks to maintain that turf and make sure that all of that traffic is going to, you know, won't kill the grass or anything. You're at 18 right now with the NWSL. Your gut, and like I said, this is just you thinking out into the ether. Where do you think the ceiling is / should be for the NWSL? Because, I mean, like I said, they've gained four franchises, whether actually playing or coming up in future years, in short order. They're at 18. I know Philadelphia is kind of mad that they, you know, that they'd like to be a part of this process. Where do you see the ceiling for the league when it comes to their future? Are they just going to cap it at X point, or are they just going to sit there and let it ride, do you think?
I don't think at this point they have announced more expansion desires in the near term, and I think despite the kind of growth that we've seen from them recently in that department, I think it's good to kind of tamper down a little bit. The league talks a lot about being, you know, wanting to get the top talent, wanting to get the best, you know, the best in the world. And I mean, we see it, talk about the WNBA again. I mean, we see, you know, what they're able to do with, you know, their new CBA and paying players and kind of the money in the system. And I think that sometimes if you just grow and expand, I think there's a lot in the system that they can currently work around that's being worked on for sure. But I think there's kind of a lot when it comes to, I don't know, player experience, other ways to invest in it, other than getting a new team, a new market. I think it's been great in Denver and Boston. I think it's, you know, going to be amazing in Atlanta. I think it's going to be great in Columbus as well. But at the same time, I think kind of going with what they have, I think 18 is a lot. And I think, you know, I would hope that this league has a very long life, and and I think that kind of stretching it out really quickly and not taking care of what's already here, the players that are here, what they want. I think there's plenty to work on in a growing league already. So I would say the excitement of expansion will be good, and then kind of let it ride for a while. See what new rivalries form. See what, you know, new dynasties form. And then kind of maybe reassess a few years after that. But who knows? We could be here, you know, when Atlanta starts in 2028 and there's, you know, six new cities, because they're not going to have a problem of, I don't think that there's ever going to be a problem for them of like cities don't want a team. At this point, women's sports are just, you know, here, and people want them. So the Philadelphias, the Nashvilles, the Austins, you know, these places that are huge soccer markets, and even places that, you know, MLS hasn't established a footprint either, that, you know, they could expand into more. You know, you saw them strike first with San Diego. You know, there's plenty of markets that we could sit here and spitball that I'm sure would, you know, put up 205 or more. So it's only a matter of time, but I think probably slowing down a little bit might be for the best.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Margaret Fleming from Front Office Sports hanging out with us discussing NWSL 2 CBUS, now that it is official. I mean, yeah, for me, I see all of this money coming in, and it's like, well, you know,
if you could address your salary cap issues and maybe not just, you know,
that to me is just an entirely different thing. It's like, yeah, I know that the NWSL is trying to be hip. I get it. But if you would take just look, work on your salary cap problems and focus on that maybe for a couple of years and then get that, you know, instead of the hip rule and everything. Sorry, I got on my soapbox for 35 seconds.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. I mean, if they're going to keep adding owners, you know, there's one side of the coin that's like, you know, we have, or one side of the argument that's like, you know, we have these new owners coming in who understand the expectation and are willing to go up in the salary cap. But at the same time, that doesn't erase the owners who are already there who, you know, you got to either convince to get on board or work with or whatever. I think, you know, salary cap and facilities and, you know, even just like professionalism, you know, like investing in the health and performance. Like there's all these things that like players talk about. None of this is breaking news. we know about these things and the league knows about these things. And the league, I think, wants to also invest in those areas. The league wants to grow the league and pay the players more. It's just a matter of like how to do that and run the business, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think all those areas are worth looking into in addition to expansion. But I think, you know, expansion's been good and steady. And now maybe, you know, turning and focusing on.
Yeah, you got four new Christmas presents that you've opened up here. And it's like shiny bikes and computers and, you know, things like that. You know, maybe just, you know, I don't know. Maybe if you just kind of focused on, you know, the CD player and the laptop that you got a couple of years ago and make sure that they're running at 100%. That would be, you know, for me, like I said. But the thing is, I think what this does, when you have all of this new money coming in, and I guess it's capital N, capital M, new money, with expansion fees and the Haslams and Arthur Blank and what you're seeing out of Boston and what you're seeing out of Denver with the celebs that are attached and private equity going to Bay, I think what this also does is it probably reminds the franchises, look, you don't have to break the bank if you want to do things your way. Because, I mean, if you want to build through an academy structure, like we see in Major League Soccer with some franchises, you build through an academy structure, you're successful that way, you're not blowing $9 gazillion a year, bringing in top talent from around the planet just to kind of be there. I think this gives the NWSL that opportunity to sit there and have each franchise figure out their own way. If they want to spend gazillion dollars, cool. If you want to build internally, fine. I think that when you get to right now at 18 franchises, you're like, okay, we'll figure out, okay, who wants to do it one way, who wants to do it another. I think that this is just another example of that.
I think the new teams that are coming in also raise the bar. I mean, you see, I think Atlanta is going to raise the bar in a lot of ways, both for venue, but also, you know, facility. You see tons of existing teams making new facilities. You see, you know, the new teams coming in, building new venues, building new facilities. And just kind of, I think that raises the professionalism, the level across the league. You don't want to be the team that is left behind. You know, it puts good pressure on. And like you said, I mean, every team, every market's going to have its own individual, you know, advantages and disadvantages. You know, some one might have a facility, one might have the, you know, like you said, the youth structure going. You know, there's all different ways to kind of handle it and ways to, you know, spend and invest in the team. But yeah, I think it's only a good thing to put in these owners who, like, I think the cool thing too about, not to, you know, toot these, you know, people's horns that probably don't need it, but like, it's cool. It's cool to have, you know, these owners in these 2028 owners coming in Atlanta and Columbus, who are these major, you know, NFL owners, these billionaires. They have, you know, plenty of money. That's, you know, got a lot of money for a league that, you know, wants it, but it's also like, they're huge soccer people. Mm-hmm. They're huge soccer people. It's not just like they're here because it's, you know, cool to get in on women's soccer right now or something. They've clearly demonstrated a big interest in soccer, investment in soccer in each of their markets. And so I think it's kind of a unique pairing. To go back to the W again, you see a lot of times they like to pair with the NBA owners that they know have the capital to invest in the league. And I feel like that's kind of similar here to what the NWSL is doing, is like they're choosing these big time sports owners, these with this huge soccer focus and investment history, and saying like, you know, we know that our players will be in good hands here. So I think that's kind of an interesting, I don't know, trend from them. So
that there is that, yes, they view it as an investment as a part of their portfolio, but at the same time, they get it. They understand the larger picture about growing the game.
Yeah, it's like these are people who are both smart in business and passionate about soccer, which I feel like, I don't know, sometimes with sports owners, you don't always get both. It's a little mixed or a lot of passions there, but the money side does not come through or whatever it is. So I'm sure they will have plenty of problems in their own rights. But, you know, just from, you know, on paper, it all seems to be trending in the right direction.
Yeah. Another couple of moments with you before. Do we need to get a note to your bosses that you were kind of busy this morning? Yeah. Do you need like a please excuse Margaret from class kind of thing?
They know where I am. They know where I am. Okay. I'm hanging out as long as you want me to hang out.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, you've got Kansas City that's built their own barn. And I think that that's also another part of the process. One of the things that, and this is like I said, this is just another pet peeve of mine, that when you have teams building facilities or going into venues, I think they're shortchanging themselves with their capacities. Boston, to me, with the whole White Stadium project and everything, I'm concerned that they're selling themselves too short. And I know that you want to maybe create artificial supply and demand with tickets and all that kind of stuff. But I've always thought if you're coming into Major League Soccer, you got to have a capacity of 30,000, because I think you're selling your fans short. And I think you're selling the game short, because you could do other things in that venue and continue to grow the game. What Kansas City's doing is fantastic. I just think the venue is too small. I hope that they can expand it without taking it into the river. And you know, having to do like pontoons and things in that one end zone. That's just really, honestly, for me, it's great that you're bringing folks in. I want the venues to be a true representation of the demand and the appreciation for the sport. Does that make sense?
I think that's super fair. I mean, I think Denver too, I might be totally wrong on this, but I think I remember that they're also, what they're building is smaller than, I mean, obviously it's smaller than what they filled at their home opener, but you know, it's less demand. It's fewer seats than the demand that they've been seeing. Same with White Stadium. I mean, you kind of see two ends of the spectrum. In Atlanta, there's going to be, you know, empty seats, which is okay, you know, for big matches and for, you know, home openers and things like that. I'm sure that they can fill it up, and they might totally prove me wrong. And I hope that they do. I really hope that they do. But like, that's okay. I don't think anyone's expecting them to fill, you know, 70,000 seats for every single match. But they're going to have empty seats. And on, you know, the other side, there's going to be places that are already too small. Kansas City, you know, it's tough because it's so cool to see these owners building facilities or stadiums, venues, to see like the players getting to play in a stadium that's for them, to get to see the sport have that and that level of investment. It's great to see it happening, and at the same time it is tough because it's like, you know, that they could fill, you know, 10,000 more seats, 20,000 more seats, 30,000 more seats, whatever it is. So it is tough. It's tough to see, especially for, you know, Boston, Denver, some of these that you know could probably fill a little bit more, but at the same time, I think, you know, that might just be something over the years that the owners, you know, kind of sense out demand and deal with. You know, maybe they turn into some kind of crazy tailgating situation instead. You know, you never know what kind of solutions they might come up with. But yeah, it's kind of a tough situation. Then again, I mean, I feel like I keep talking about basketball here, but I just, you know, I'm a big basketball fan also. You see the Golden State Valkyries, that's the new expansion team in the WNBA this last season. They filled out the Chase Center where the Warriors play, 18,000, I think 64 is the capacity, every single game. And there's teams in the W that have, you know, 4,000 seats. And, you know, there's just this disparity in women's sports more generally of the venue sizes. And I think eventually that might level out a little bit. But for now, I think there's going to be this weird in between where some markets there are not enough seats and other markets they're, you know, open seats. And, yeah, maybe people travel a little more. I don't really know the right answer there, but it is unfortunate that there's going to be not enough seats for all the fans at the same time. I think that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I think the way that it's probably going to work in Atlanta is for special events, special games. They're going to try. They're going to open up the full bowl, mm-hmm. and they're going to try to smack the Denver record, you know, right in the teeth. And I think that they probably will for that first match. But then what they do, it's the configuration that they have for Atlanta United, where big games, they open up the entire stadium. Other games, they'll have just the lower bowl, the 100s and the 200s, and that's 41,000. So I would imagine that's going to be the layout, is the season tickets for Atlanta 2028, they're going to be in that 41,000 configuration. And then for special events, they'll open it up like they always do for like the 75, you know, 78, 80,000. I think that'll be the way of the world for Atlanta. I was looking up while we were talking about Denver. They go Mile High, and then they go to Dixon in Commerce City. Mm-hmm. Then Centennial, which is where they're going to supposedly in the summer, meant to seat 12, and it's going to serve as the team's home until at least 2028 when the team's owners hope, and this is from Denverite, team's owners hope to finish construction on a larger stadium in Denver's Baker neighborhood, and so they're looking at 2028 for stadium number 4 that they will have been in by the time that they will have gotten things rolling.
And the Centennial isn't open yet. They're building it now. That's going to be at their practice facility. Yeah, so it's
modular, probably one of those modular things, and you sit there and you look at it and go, okay, cool, I understand where you're going with this. So you are going to be incredibly busy. I don't know if you've heard about this World Cup thing that's happening. Front office, what's your coverage? What are you telling them that you need to do come 55 days from now? How busy are you going to be?
Oh, goodness. I mean, very.
He premises, oh, goodness, and backs up.
No, I mean, I'm super stoked. It's going to be awesome. I mean, that's what I signed up for. That's why I wanted to, you know, switch over. I've only been doing soccer for a couple months now because I wanted to get, you know, going before the tournament. And I'm, you know, it's been crazy, but it's been awesome. And I'm really happy to be here. The summer's going to be wild. It's going to be wild. I'm going to be bouncing all over the place. I'm based in New York, and we have a lot of matches in New Jersey. It might, you know, cost a little bit to get out to the stadium.
Get an Uber or just rent a car. Rent a car and pay for parking.
Yeah, the options are tough. We'll see if I can get one of those $150 train tickets. But
I don't want to know what the Hampton Inn, a couple exits down from the Meadowlands, is going to be charging for their nightly rate. That's why.
Probably a lot. So, all to say, I'll get to go to matches here, and I'm super pumped about that. Gonna try to hit up some around the country as well. You know, trying to see exactly where at this point, but hoping to catch U.S. in some places, hoping to catch Argentina, hoping to get to see some fan fests in different cities. I am super excited to see what the different fan fests look like. I think every city has had a different story there. Some places are really scaling back. Some places are really going for it. Some places are spreading it out among 10 different cities. And you know, some places are saying we're going to have just one in the middle the whole time. And so I'm excited to see kind of what that looks like in every, you know, I don't think I'll get to every city, and I
can't wait to see your end of World Cup invoice, your travel report.
Oh gosh.
reimbursement to FOS's front office when you're done with the thing. It's like, okay, so how many pages is that PDF? And it's like that thick, you know. Like, wait, what is this? Where was this at 3 o'clock in the morning in insert market here?
So not too much 3 o'clock in the morning, but I appreciate that they're letting me do this and excited and supporting me to do it. It's definitely not, you know, the hotel prices and the flights, you know, and a lot of these host cities are really nasty. So I appreciate them supporting me doing the World Cup. It's gonna be
so
fun.
So then what I would like to do is, when you figure out your itinerary, we'd like to have you in as a part of our normal World Cup coverage and discussing what you're seeing, whether it's games and all this kind of stuff. You know, if you're marooned there in the tri-state and it's like, man, I only got to go to the Meadowlands for the semifinal, and it's like, oh darn, we'll have to talk to you about that. Is it okay if we kind of bookmark you and sit there and it's like, yeah, we'd like to have you as a World Cup regular, kind of working your way through things, if we're not like waking you up at a really obscene hour or something?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah, that sounds awesome. It's going to be fun wherever I'm at in the country. yeah, I'm happy to jump in and help out. I would really like to make it to Atlanta. I'm hoping to get to come for the semifinal. That would be a big goal of mine. So yeah, that's up there, hopefully.
we're going to be flying around all over the place, at least here in Atlanta. Since we're anchored here, we've got a lot of live remotes and things like that. The morning show is going to be going on. We're going to have a nighttime show. The daily show that's attached to Jason on his 92.9 over on FM. That's daily. That's coming up daily to do a World Cup thing, obviously, us in the morning show. So we'll all be incoherent and asking all of our guests to come in and talk about things as well. But, yeah, when you know what your rundown is, let us know. And we'd like to sit there and we'd like to reserve you here, and here to talk about everything that's going on. The Twitch pitch has welcomed you with open arms. I believe you've been added to the stacks. That's what we call our live chat, the Twitch pitch. And so they're like, hey, don't be a stranger. Welcome aboard. All those kinds of things. Don't know what you've gotten yourself into probably, but nevertheless. So go and get your caffeine. And thanks for dropping by as now you always will. And for those that may follow on the Twitters and on the social medias, it is at FOS for Front Office Sports. And then it is MG Fleming 12. Was that the number that you wore?
That's my birthday.
One, two, or 12?
12, actually. Oh, wow. I consider that a pretty good, I don't know. There's some birthdays that are just, I think a lot of people feel that way about their birthday, but I feel like
numerologists are sitting there and they're going, ooh, so it's the same thing. But as always, glad that we got you to rope in here to the morning show. And like I said, don't be a stranger. Honestly, if there's anything that you ever want to vent your spleen about, you know how to get in touch with me. And it's like, Nelson, I got to come in here. I got to talk about something. and it's like, okay, fine. It is one gigantic morning party. And like I said, this is me and caffeine right now. So that's kind of how things work. Go get your brunch and go hide in a cubicle and tell them that, yeah, man, they kept me for like an hour. I don't know what happened. So once again, thanks for dropping by and we'll catch up with you soon. Okay.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Margaret Fleming, Front Office Sports, and I think she's probably just going to go running off into the sunset now. She's like, I cannot believe, what have I just done? It's like the scene at the end of the chase scene in the movie where you just see the star just kind of running off into the sunset, and it's just like, no! One of those. So Margaret Fleming, we now add her to the stacks. Jason's had her on his program on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, and so now we add Margaret to the stacks as well because of her coverage of soccer at Front Office and her NWSL coverage. And so it made too much sense to bring her in to be a part of things here on the morning show. So two guests down, 1 hour down. And it's great to be able to catch up with Margaret as we continue to work things through during the World Cup, during the growth of the NWSL, as the season goes along, and when economics come and we have to have those kinds of conversations. So once again, great to catch up with a lot of our friends here this week on The Best of SDHAM. Follow Soccer Down Here on all of your social media platforms. And also don't forget to subscribe to the Morning Espresso newsletter. You can go to soccerdownhere.net. And our friend Jason Longshore, what he does is he gives you everything you need to know to start your day in written form. And you can go to soccerdownhere.net. There's a subscription box. You enter your email. You subscribe to Morning Espresso, thanks to our friends at Oglethorpe University. And you get your reading off the direction that it's supposed to find out what you might have missed and what's going to happen along the day. Where the audio and the video version, Jason is partly the reading version. Monday through Friday here, Monday through Sunday, really, across the SDH network. That is the Best of SDHAM. For Jason, for Jarrett, for Nick, for Vanessa, for Sophia, for Maddie, I'm just John. And for Drew, thanks for dropping by here on the SDH network. The Best of SDHAM, Monday through Friday on all your social media platforms. Podcasts are reserved later, so you can go to Apple and Spotify and find out all the different segments that you might have missed during the week or listen to the shows in their entirety, or
go to the YouTube channel, and you can either listen, watch, or maybe both. Have a couple of different devices going on at the same time. That is the best of SDHAM. Mujiplati, I'll play it safe. And since it is the end of the show, that means we roll the close. We'll catch up with you again next week.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.